oh shit, like white supremacy culture is eating me alive, and then finding some sort of freedom at the other side. Like, it's literally like we're in the business of helping people truly live. So many of us are not actually living.
Hello, and welcome to Decolonize Everything. My name is Rebecca Mendoza Nunziato, your host and conversation partner. On this show, we start the conversation about decolonization. We're disrupting the status quo by supporting new consciousness and liberation through practical tips and radical ideas. This episode comes at a fun time because my conversation partner today, Jenny Medrano, had a really big month. It's May 2021 and Jenny turned 30 years old. Happy birthday, Jenny. And also just announced that she's transitioning out of her job at Building Bridges and moving full time to do her coaching work with her own business, Jenny Medrano Coaching. She's been at Building Bridges for 4 years, and she's done some incredible work with programming, well, really deprogramming internalized racism, teaching workshops, and transforming businesses, organizations, and individuals across the Denver metro area, and I'm sure far beyond. At the time of recording this, Jenny had not made this announcement yet. She's leaving on good terms, and she's really excited for the entrepreneurial work ahead of her. So congrats, happy birthday, and thank you so much, Jenny, for your time joining us on the show.
Hey, my name is Jenny Medrano. I use she, her, hers, and they, them pronouns. And I am a DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion trainer by day, and a rising holistic liberation coach. Not by night, that sounds weird. By the week.
I was kind of wondering how you could do that.
I want to talk about what it means to be doing this work of, you know, pursuing justice and equity, really being an educator and a facilitator and, you know, these roles that I think we clearly need, right? We clearly need these kind of people like you to kind of stand in the gap between where we find ourselves and where we want to be. But that's heavy shit. Like, that's a lot of work. What is that like?
Yeah, it's been a lot. And so right now I am building my own side business of coaching around holistic liberation. So currently, like as we're talking, I'm still doing this DEI training. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I don't know how long like I can really be in this, because it is what I'm learning is for BIPOC in the space of DEI training, yes, we can do it if we're paid to do it. But I just highly, highly recommend that there's a baton path kind of system happening in order for us to really make it through. And so the burden I've had to hold with doing DEI training has been one of, how do I hold all the possible voices, things that people would want to say, who are Black, Indigenous, or people of color in this space about how this organization is running. And that's impossible. I try my hardest, and still I miss things. And then people don't even listen. We're not actually living as full, thriving humans. We're living as these really sad ghost shadow versions of ourselves that are subject to white supremacy, that are subject to systemic oppression.
Because for so many people, DEI is the solution, right? And I think you and I have experienced how short-sighted that is.
Yeah.
How far can this take us? Where does DEI fail us? And maybe also, like, where does it really help us?
Yeah, so I have seen how DEI, it can be hugely beneficial and then hugely not. And I think the thing that sets Building Bridges apart, at least, is our ability to focus on the deconditioning and deprogramming work that has to happen around internalized racism, internalized sexism, and all the things. And that's what really has made it worth it to me. And I believe that that kind of work is always going to be needed. And it's a lot of how we do things. So we'll go into organizations and we will make it so, so simple. Let's focus on our emotional intelligence. Let's focus on our cultural intelligence. But people need that practice. It's like CrossFit. People are starting to move their liberation muscles. They're systemic justice muscles. And so for that reason, I think that DEI work will always be needed. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that there's a lot of critique about it being short-sighted and not the solution.
When you use the word holistic liberation, I feel like you're saying that there's something more.
You picked up on that right away. Yes, like not just focusing on organizational change, but personal change and liberation in all the ways. Like people want to make this just a work thing or just an intellectual thing or just a political thing, which is the worst way to put it. But really, it's got to be your whole lifestyle. If you're enacting white supremacy culture on a day-to-day basis in your office, you're most likely doing it at the gym with your relationships, with your friends, and all the ways. So we can't stop at workplace or school or institutional level. It has to happen personally on a deep, deep level, mind, body, spirit. And what's really, really sad to me too is that I have only stumbled upon liberation work as a Latina by accident. You know, like by accident in college, I started getting access and exposed to more classes and more thought processes around systemic oppression. Right. And then by accident, like I met some people who really cared about this in Denver, not by accident, very intentionally. I started building the DEI branch of Building Bridges.
Yeah.
But still, I didn't know what was going to happen. Yeah. And then Liberated was created, which is a BIPOC cohort. And that pushed me into deeper liberation as a facilitator.
Yeah, the by accident thing is fascinating because it even, I think, shows that we're not meant to go down this path. You know, the society has been designed to maybe offer a sprinkling of perspective from marginalized communities, but nothing more. You can kind of get this one ethnic studies class in, or maybe one gender studies class in, but generally stay on this normative dominant path. Just in your experience, how often do you find that organizations or individuals keep coming back? How does that potentially an accidental moment of encountering this work turn into kind of a larger journey?
That's a great question. Like at Building Bridges and some of the other liberation work I'm a part of, usually people think, oh, a BIPOC space? I've never had that. Hey, the world is on fire. That would actually be really great. The experiences are crazy different. And yet both people get a taste and they're like, wait a minute, this is different. The facilitators, the way we facilitate, we don't let you off the hook to not engage or participate. We care that you're there and we're going to ask you to lean in. And if you're not, we'll notice. So all of a sudden, you're connected to the rest of the people now in a Zoom room. And people often leave being like, I didn't know it was possible to feel that connected in a Zoom. So that keeps them coming back for sure.
Well, to me, that's part of the decolonial nature of it is that you're not just selling you're not selling a commodity. It's not just come and get your stamp or your certificate or, whatever these things are that we give each other in the world is saying you're proficient at something. It really is an invitation into relationship, which I think is what will save the world personally is we have to somehow find ways to be in relationship. And I've been in those rooms with you facilitating and I know I can't in person and on Zoom. And it's no, this is a opportunity to actually show up. And I go to so many Zoom calls where I just kind of check out halfway through or start doing something else or turn whatever those things are. But that also speaks to the fact that so many times I do that because in those spaces, nobody cares that I'm there. Take whatever you want from this, whatever, it'll be on YouTube later. It's not actually about engaging in liberation work together.
Yeah. And that is on one hand, if we want to talk about tapping into my indigenous roots, which I know you're all about.
I do want to hear it.
There is so much about my job at Building Bridges and other jobs where it's like I enter the space and I inherit what the ways things were done according to the history of the organization. And in Building Bridges' case, having 25 years of experience starting in the Middle East, conflict transformation, like their roots were strong. The conflict transformation skills, the facilitation approach is beautiful. I feel so lucky to have learned it and that it's lived on this long. On the other hand, there as it wasn't my culture and wasn't my, a lot of the EDs have been historically white at Building Bridges. And that has also influenced the culture of how things were when I got there 3 years ago. And so what I realize now that I couldn't say back then is that in me having these ideas, quote unquote, out of nowhere, I was really getting spiritual guidance from my ancestors on how to really tap back into circles of change and indigenous practices of healing and community. And it helped me do things like our group norm process. It helped like narrow down to these 6 golden norms, we call them. And it's like the core, like make space, take space is a huge reason why people feel so different in our sessions, because for once they're asked to take space if they're quieter or have oppressed identity. And that wasn't my idea of a norm. That norm's been around, but my ancestors guiding in elevating that norm and focusing on that really has changed the game.
Oh, I love it. You knew I wanted to get into this.
Yeah.
I was just going to make my way there eventually. But yeah, like totally talking about spirituality.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you another story, because speaking of my ancestors, this is definitely where I inherited this. So one thing that really sparked me into owning that I can tap into my indigenous Aztec ancestors and that they're here with me was also at Building Bridges. It was a couple years ago at one of our summer intensives for our youth program. And we had a really diverse group of facilitators, like one of the most diverse groups I've ever been a part of, age, race, gender, religion, sexuality, all of it. And one of those really quirky, different people was Maren Miller. And she was like, hey, y'all, I am a Reiki practitioner, if anybody would like that. So just let me know. And I just was watching her like the first couple days. She had like these little essential oils. I saw her put her hands up randomly and like it looked like she was sending powers to people. And I was really curious. And I was like, hey, what is that thing you said you do? Mm-hmm. She's like, Reiki? Yeah, what is that? I think I need that. So it's,
I've never heard this origin story. I really like it so far.
She's like, yeah, name the time and place, let's do it. Because she loves to do this energetic healing work. And the program was 10 days long. And I put it off because I was kind of weirded out by it, because I still had like these conditioned beliefs of Christianity on me, right? Yeah. So finally, like come day 7 or 8, the youth were wilding out. They were not acting right. They were just arguing with each other left and right. They were not wanting to participate in the sessions. They were talking shit about each other behind their backs. They were like bullying some of the participants. And so it was a wild summer. And at one point, like we had to decide like how to tell these participants, these youth, these young people, something needs to change. Otherwise, you're not going to get the full transformation experience of this summer. Maren did Reiki for me one night. I felt kind of like desperate for some kind of help. And like legit, it was a spiritual experience. Like I felt like I could see my ancestors. And Maren confirmed it at speaking out. Like she's like, I see lots and lots of people in a line around you right now. They look like your ancestors, like your mom's here, your grandma's here. They're all here. And like my throat literally, like I started coughing and it like my throat chakra opened up from that experience. Oh my gosh. So much so that I was able to go downstairs and Becca, I don't even know what I said, but I was transported somehow to speak so clearly that they got it. They were like, oh shit, we messed up. And like, how do we lean into this? And the air, I can't even describe it. The air in the room, there was like 50 people in that room and the air felt different.
Yep.
And afterwards, like the rest of the facilitators were like, how did you do that? Wow, like the way you just talked to them and communicated so clearly.
Wow.
And at that moment, I started talking to my dad's mom, Diego, who I had never talked to before. I started talking more to my mom, who's passed.
Yeah. Oh, holy cow, that's really powerful. Thank you for sharing that. To me, like that's a liberation story. And I imagine that's like a beginning for you. Like it's a point that something began. So yeah, how has that transformed the way that you do this work?
It's made me feel so much more confident because I feel surrounded. Like I used to feel so alone. And then that would very much show up in my energy. Like I was just like, everyone's here to hurt me and everyone's trying to gang up on me and microaggress me and I'm mad at everyone and I hate white people and all this.
Yeah.
And like I still have moments like that today, but I think partially just maturing emotionally, healing work, really acknowledging how surrounded I believe I am spiritually by guides and ancestors. It's made me feel way more in empowerment. Like if some white person wants to go toe-to-toe with me in an organization and tell me how I don't know what I'm talking about or they want to see the facts or the research, like let's go. I will look at you and tell you to your face that what you're doing is trying to rationalize and stay in the cerebral, which is the origin of white supremacy anyways. Yep. Move into your body. What are you feeling right now? Is it defensiveness? Right. So that's part of your white fragility, sir.
Yeah. Bringing that to when you got, I remember, you know, you got on Instagram right after Adam Toledo was murdered. And I was listening to you talk and I don't know if it felt the same to you as some of these other times, but I felt like you were spitting fire, but you were also vulnerable in a way that I feel like it's hard for us to be vulnerable when we do feel alone and afraid. And yes, we continue to feel alone and afraid, but also, I don't know, I guess I just sensed something in you that felt like you over these years, like you're able to show up to these spaces and just speak the truth. And it's great to hear a little bit more behind that in terms of the spiritual grounding and this embodied encounter with your ancestry.
Thanks for saying that. I do feel more and more that I have these surges of energy when I want to share something with people and it feels beyond me. It feels like wisdom being transferred in the second by second. It's like my integration of my experience and my knowledge with some other divinity, ancestral power. And I think the work I've done in DEI has really helped me. It's second nature now. There's so many moments, Becca, we don't know what to do. Anybody who says we have the handbook and we know from start to finish what your organization needs to do, they're lying. You don't actually know. You don't know the people. Yeah. You haven't got to know their problems. There's a level of like having to trust that you're going to get wisdom in the moment for those people. And I've had to do that every single time in a lot of different ways. And trusting that intuition and that voice has helped myself, my co-facilitators, and many organizations already start to experience real change and shifts of energy and power.
I love that because it's not a plan. It's not a curriculum. Like, yes, you have some tools in your tool belt and they're very powerful. I can speak from experience, but it's not going to happen the same twice. Right.
Mm-mm.
And to even be able to, like you said, go toe to toe with someone in an organization who is probably, unfortunately, thinking about, well, how do I, you know, get the most bang for my buck with this thing? Or how do I, like, be really efficient at this, like, anti-rate? Like, I'm just thinking of places.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I feel like I've heard that verbatim.
And you're having to say, actually, I'm inviting you into something a hell of a lot deeper. You know, like, buckle up. If we're going to do this, if we're really going to do this.
It baffles me at my age, with my gender identity, my racial ethnic identity, how I'm able to go toe to toe with so many of these people, because most of the people that I'm working with when it comes to executive directors, CEOs, leadership teams, like they're older than me, they're whiter than me. And I used to be so intimidated by that. I don't know if you relate to this. Like, currently I'm 29, about to be 30. I cannot wait.
Hey,
I cannot wait to be 30.
Gosh.
So, like, there's the ageism piece. Yes. And then also there's maybe the old soul trapped in a young person's body piece. And I just see right through the bullshit now. As a younger person, I wasn't able to see that. I could only see, and a younger, less liberated person could only see them in their perceived power and status, which is a lie. Like, wow.
Yeah,
there are
not real.
So many people. Maybe if I whisper this, people won't hear. There's so many people in leadership positions who should not be there, just like ill-equipped leaders. And so when I'm able to see through the bullshit, I'm just like, what? You're gonna try to tell me that you know about this? You don't know about this. Like, I look forward to moments like this. I can't wait to see how my superpower shows up of intuition and hearing what they're not saying. And it's definitely an energetic thing, right? To counter that, especially as BIPOC, how do we always bring this energy of authority?
One thing I would love to know a little bit more about is kind of if there are any rituals or kind of ways that you've gotten into that space. Like, how have you cultivated that spiritual attunement or that way of continuing to engage with your ancestors and find that power?
Oh, I wish I had more answers for you, because I have that same question. Yeah. Rituals and practices, they're not as directly linked to my culture as I know of. But I definitely have moved into, like, tarot cards. That's a very common practice for me.
Yeah.
And a little note on that, like, I used to be a Christian, and the Bible would be this thing where it really helped confirm my intuition and gave me words for things that I was feeling. And then I stopped reading the Bible, and I was like, I felt this gap, because words for me are so powerful, images to help connect me to my intuition. And when I was first introduced to tarot cards, I was just like, what? These are just vehicles for intuition. So that has been a huge practice for me.
It's funny you bring that up. I would love to hear more about it, because I don't know. So I'm just thinking about that idea of these different conduits or different ways of working with our intuition, and how I really do think our generation is trying to find the rituals that will help us. Because we've
had
access to a lot of those things. And so we're looking for them. We're looking for what are the things that will help us stay connected.
A book that you recommended to me, Voices of Your Ancestors. Mm. I've used that so many times. I'm so grateful that you recommended that. And we've used one of the meditations of releasing a burden and leaving it in a flower. We've used that in our BIPOC groundwork every time. And I really feel like along with what you're saying, I've been on a journey of trying to, is the word de-westernize like my meditation practices.
Yes.
And just.
Yes.
Or decolonize.
Decolonize them. Yep.
That's a better word.
both apply. But it's funny though, because so many of the meditation practices have been colonized from the East.
Right. I know.
It's a lot.
It's kind of a mind fuck. I think another thing I've tried is like mudras with my hands according to my chakras. I'm big into chakras in terms of rituals and just learning about each of them and kind of the energy that they hold. The process that I went on, that I've been on for the past couple of years, has had a lot to do with my throat chakra and my third eye and opening those. And I notice when I meditate and bring energy to those and when I don't.
I have one professor, to be nerdy for a second, I have one professor who talks about ritual from a Confucian perspective, and it's this idea of breaking the self. And I actually find it really helpful because I feel like a lot of our kind of Western filters on meditation are very much like self-celebratory, which of course, like, I want to be on this journey of like loving myself. Absolutely. I need that. But also when we talk about colonialism and racism and how it's steeped into everything, I also need meditation and ritual practices that break those things out of me, right? And help me connect to the roots and help me connect to the ancestors. And help me go back through the history of these like colonial traumas, right? And so I just keep thinking, like, what does it mean to draw energy into these rituals without disconnecting it from this larger liberation struggle?
I've definitely been on that journey this year, especially the past 6 months, even more of self-love and joy and celebration. Oof. And there's so many different ways that I'm trying to lean into it, because I'm on this holistic liberation path, which basically means throw away everything you know and adapt new things. And one of the things, like, I talked about this one time on IG, but the way that I wake up is so, I am so aggressively cheerleader-ish. I'll just be like, as soon as I wake up, yep, we're going to get that. Today's the day. Hello, beautiful. We got this.
This is what you tell yourself?
This is what I tell myself in my mind. And I will just let it like pierce through the other thoughts that are already coming and then keep it going until I walk to the bathroom and wash my face. And then I've also done voice recording affirmations, which are so good. They benefit me very much because they're very specific. Like, people want to hear affirmations of some other meditation. Those may not help you. Like,
exactly.
If you are struggling with not believing in yourself and your entrepreneurial abilities, tell yourself, I am an entrepreneur for the ages. I am a badass businesswoman. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to hear your voice say that for time.
Wow. Yeah. So you're talking about finding, not going to find the thing that you think you need somewhere else. You're talking about you're giving it to yourself. Like, you're speaking it. You, on some level, deep down here, you know what you need to hear.
Yeah. It goes back to the ancestral wisdom in a way, because we have all these answers. We have all this guidance that's beyond us, that's waiting to be tapped into. Mm. And I feel like what is very Western, what is very capitalistic, consumeristic, is let me go out and find what I need.
Yes.
Like, literally, like, all off the shelf. These advertisements are telling us what we need outside of ourselves.
Constantly.
With your phone recordings could do a whole hell of a lot more in 6 months than any program, than any makeover, than any Bali retreat. Hey, who needs to hear this? Record what you need to hear in your phone and tell yourself that. Okay, you don't need a Tesla. And the Bali retreat thing too, I was telling myself, because I really, really want to go to Bali and have a retreat. But sometimes I have these visions of like, if I go meditate somewhere for 10 days, my problems will go away.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, right. It's what we sell ourselves constantly, right? Oh, endlessly. I think I'm going to try the waking up and cheerleading myself thing. That's a good one.
I mean, just try it, like, see what comes out in terms, because I've experienced depression. That's a big part of why I started doing it, because it, especially like a couple years ago, 4 years ago or 5 years ago, it was so bad, Becca. Like, I felt like I was so hateful towards myself, hateful towards the world. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know, it's that kind of shifting in energy, even though it's kind of like you got to fake it till you make it energy, because it may feel really awkward, but then eventually becomes normal.
this week has been brutal. We've just been engaging, like, thing after thing, murder after murder, just trying to figure out what it means to show up in the world right now. And I'm wondering, like, how are you positioning yourself? Because I feel like a lot of BIPOC are saying, like, I just need space. Like, I can't with white people for so many reasons and for so many good reasons. You're an educator. Like, you work with, I mean, we all work with white people on some level.
Yeah.
This is your actual work, right? And so mm-hmm. I'm wondering, like, how do you show up in the world in a week like this and a week like next week, holding the reality of what we just faced in our country?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I feel awkward sometimes as a non-Black Latina in this time and age of a civil rights movement, because I so believe and see, I didn't always used to see it, mm-hmm. but see how Black people are the most oppressed and the most exploited and all the things, and then after that are the other people of color groups, and it's mm-hmm. just like clear in all the statistics you can pull up: police brutality, yep. Incarceration rates, education, everything.
Yep.
And I try not to ever be too comfortable because yep. of that. You know what I'm saying? Like I try to embrace the awkwardness, and thus my privilege.
Yeah. Well, and the whole not hiding behind the BIPOC category, right? Like the ways that we get thrown in, and it's like, no, really, we need to talk about anti-Blackness right now, right?
Yeah. And in that, it's looked so clumsy, Becca. Like it's like, it's recent that I'm starting to understand this more. And part of it was because of me voicing things this past year during mm-hmm. the George Floyd protests and things, mm-hmm. and trying to just be a voice and getting called out around the anti-Blackness in the Latinx community, and just yep. saying like, Latinx people, we need to stand for Black lives, and Afro-Latinx people being like, hello, what the fuck?
Yeah.
We're not Latinx, right? Like, yeah. And I have been so humbled by that, as well as Black folks that I know, friends that I have, that a lot of them are just so gracious. Like, Black women are just the best. Yeah. And like, they're so gracious, and I feel like the ways that they've called me out or the ways that they've guided me to things are still not even as brash mm. as mean as they could have been from how much, you know. So that's on my mind all the time and my heart in terms of how I show up as an ally, while at the same time trying to navigate that there is this conversation among Latinx folks of like, who's white passing and who's yeah. not. And do we claim our ethnic heritage along with our multiracial heritage, a mm-hmm. lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
And what I continue to come back to is the day that I could go outside, go to the gym, like go to the yep. store and be treated as if I'm a white woman, will be the day that I own or act like I have that amount of privilege.
Mm.
I have yet to see that day.
Yeah.
I have yet to live a week without some kind of occurrence or thing
yep.
happening where I'm reminded that people look at me and they see other, yep. foreign, something else.
No, I appreciate all of that, because it gets to the complexity of this work, which is why it's not just one training or 1 hour in a session or whatever, you know. Like there's just, it's so deep, and it's yeah, I mean, I think sharing all of that the way that you did is really helpful, because we easily like put DEI facilitators and consultants on this pedestal of like, okay, these are the people, they haven't figured out, right?
Yep.
And I think of it so much as like, no, these are the people who are saying they're committed to the work and they're gonna like help us through it, you know, like they're climbing up this mountain with us, you know, like are you coming, you know? Like it's just that invitation, like, are you coming? And and again, like building that community where we can hold each other accountable and invite each other into the work.
There's a lot of rage inside of me,
yeah,
especially with the back-to-back deaths of Dante Wright and Adam Toledo. Like, and that's why I did that video, because I just don't feel like people are getting it. And let me be specific. I don't feel like white people who are in the work of DEI are getting it.
Okay.
And white people in general, I mean, right. Yes, but like, especially I feel the pain and the ongoing frustration in my job with white folks who say they are getting it and claim it and are so quick to own it and are so quick to name that they're working with us or that they're doing A, B, or C. And we work with a lot of great people. So I hope, I'm not calling out all white people, right?
I get it.
But there's many instances where I can feel the disconnect of lived experience. And the way that I can kind of empathize and wrestle with it is my privileged identity as an able-bodied person.
Yeah.
No matter how much I try to be an advocate and I'm trying to lean into that and be like, hey, why don't you have a ramp at this building? Or, hey, I don't want to do that. Or let me figure out the right language to use. Yep. Do people like saying that they have a disability? No matter how much I try to do that, I don't, like, even today, I haven't thought about those. I haven't thought about my able-bodied privilege today. I'm literally only thinking about it because I use this example, but I don't have to think about it so much that when I show up to try to advocate for it, I'm so clumsy and it feels disconnected, right? That's how sometimes it feels for white folks. I feel that from white folks. Like, they haven't thought about it until that moment. Okay, so that's one side of it, right? The other side of it is I need white folks to speak up about things. I need them to speak up in white spaces, but I need white folks to speak up with conviction. Mm. And I don't know how to explain this, but it's lacking in a lot of spaces. The energy feels like lip service. The energy feels like insecurity. Like, I think I should name that this happened, or the energy is white people just straight up won't call out other white people in the middle of the call where something just happened because it's uncomfortable. And I'm like, I guess I feel like a lot of times I just need to be the one to do it because I have conviction at the ready to combat their white fragility. I mean, it can grow in white people from what I've seen, but it's just not, I don't know.
The phrase that really was just sticking with me that you used is, I have conviction at the ready. Like, it's not something you have to go and summon or like flip through your notes, you know? And I think that's how I explain so much of my experiences of grad school so far, is it's just like things, like, I feel like I'm getting hit by things that other people don't even perceive. And so it's like so I'm constantly making decisions of how to react to this white supremacy, to this racism, to this oppressive space. And enough people in the room don't even see it. They don't even know, they don't even register an issue. They don't even register like something moving through the Zoom room, you know? It's exhausting. And so it's like, what would it mean for people to have conviction at the ready because they see it, because they feel it, because they've been attuned to what is actually happening.
Back to your point earlier, like, relationships are a huge piece of it. If you're married to a BIPOC or whatever, like, it's not going to give you that lived experience, but depending on how intentional you are about the relationship, right? I know that part of why I don't have conviction at the ready for issues of disability is because I'm not in relationship with a lot of people who have disabilities. I can own that.
Yeah.
And so I think when you talk about the students or people in your academia who things are just flying by them and they don't even realize or register it's happening, I'm pretty sure that's happening all the time for me.
Yes, same.
Whereas other people would probably be like, oh my God, I wish you would say something, but no, I have to be the one to say something about this inaccessible aspect of a building or whatever it is. So I'm trying to like connect the dots to like figure out how to build that conviction, you know? Yeah, because I hear more conviction immediately following tragic events than in normal life, right? Right. I'll hear from a white person just, we cannot let this go, blah, 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 right? And then like 2 weeks later when something racist happens in a meeting or something, they're like, I mean, I don't feel like I should be the one to tell Sharon that, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, motherfucker, what happened to your conviction?
Where'd it go?
This is the work.
Well, and it's, and even that makes me think of the threshold, right? Like, what is the threshold at which we get feel conviction? And it's like, did it really take a knee on this man's neck? Like, is that really what it takes for conviction? Like, how do we bring that threshold to the meetings, to everyday meetings that we're in, and to, our families and our, you know, our social media? Like, God, like I've had to change the way that I do social media because I can't see the world the same, right? And that's been something I've had to wake up to, is like, oh man, like I've internalized fat phobia, and so how do I change my Instagram to fuck with me every day, like to just
too.
Like
I've been on that journey too.
Yes. Like, why am I scrolling through these people? Why do I keep these people on my, like, on the top of my timeline? Like, that's not good. That's not good for me. That's not good for. That's not part of liberation.
I think, out of like the past 5 years of racial battle fatigue, revolution, participating in Black Lives Matter movement, participating in inclusion equity, I have not had a season or emotional space that was so mixed up until this point. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like my nervous system doesn't really know what to do. It feels like every day, every other hour, I'm feeling something different. And that's hard to just, it's hard to land anywhere. I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe. I'm working on a cell phone addiction, because it's just so hard not to just check everything all the time, especially as things are happening every other minute.
Will you tell us about like something you're reading or listening to or watching that is igniting you lately?
Oh, something that I have been listening to as part of my morning meditation, an 11-minute YouTube video called Wim Hof Breathing that takes you through 3 rounds of intentional breathing. You breathe in and out for like 30 times, and then you hold your breath for a minute, then you do it 2 more times. And the holding breath apparently like really helps strengthen your immune system and your body. And I just feel way more awake after doing it.
Thank you, Jenny. Thank you for all this time and just like helping me laugh and feel human.
Well, it's been forever since we got to talk. So this makes me so happy, Becca.
Yes, we do.
It's so cool to reconnect. Oh, remember to cheerlead yourself in the morning, aggressively.
Aggressively. Well, that's a hilarious word. Yes. With conviction. With conviction.
With conviction. That's even better.
Thank you all so much for listening today. There's some great links and information in the show notes, specifically how you can support Jenny and find out more about her coaching business, Jenny Medrano Coaching. So be sure to follow her on Instagram and Facebook and sign up for her newsletter. As always, I'd love to hear from you, especially as I'm thinking about season 2. Do you have someone you think I should be talking to? Do you want to be on the show? Send us a pitch. We've made it 9 months and over 10 episodes with 3,500 downloads and counting. Thank you.